Session number 27053.
Mr. Drake, Reel 12. We're talking about your evacuation from the 0.593,
Snake's
Head.
Head
Ridge. And you got to the point, you were being evacuated out by Jeep down the valley.
No, we didn't get on the Jeeps.
Oh, you didn't
no,
get
no,
on,
they told us to throw our kit on so that we didn't have to carry it, but get the hell out of here. That was their words, like, and they'd taped the valley across for us, so we were going through the fields, sometimes through a bit marshy area. No, the road went further around, and it was called the Mad Mile, and they couldn't do that only when there was heavy smoke down, because the British artillery was shelling the valley the whole time, so they couldn't see where we were in the daytime. That whole valley was smoked the whole time. Well, we got back to St. Michael, and there was three-ton trucks waiting for us. We got aboard the three-ton. I think they gave us some... I'm pretty sure they did give us a drink, a tea, and a sandwich and one thing. And then we climbed upon the three-ton trucks and off we went. Bear in mind, this must have been about midnight, by the perhaps later, by the time we got back there. So we drove through the night and most of us slept in the back of the trucks. There was always camouflage nets that they used to put over the trucks when they were parked up anywhere. And so we laid on the... on these camouflage nets, all a lot of us, and slept. And the next morning, when we woke, we were at Kapua, in an orchard just outside a little town called Kapua, south of Casino. And they'd sent advance forward. As a matter of fact, Major Cook, my company commander, was one of the officer in charge. They'd gone back previously and had sorted out the positions where the different companies would be. And we then had to dig, we were issued with little bivvy tents. And
what were they like? Can you describe how you set them up?
Were just like a little two-men tent, much like a Boy Scout has today. Just crawled in it. They were about 6 foot long or so and 3 feet wide. So we dug a trench about that size, a bit bigger than an ordinary standard slit trench. And the only reason we dug them was in case they come over and bombed us at night. If they bombed us and we were down underground, like in our little trench tents. And so there we were. We had their little bivvy tents, and we were in a line in this orchard. They'd dug latrines, and they had a box with six holes in it. So when it was occupied, three men would sit back to back. There were six men back to back. And it was quite common, you know, to talk to your mates sat on the toilet.
Did they have a proper seat, or was it just a pole? I mean,
No, it was a proper seat. It was a box. If you could imagine a box about, I don't know the exact dimensions. I suppose it was 8 by 8 feet. And then there were six holes in them, you see, cut. And just like a toilet seat then, but it was just this box. And you could sat next to one another and pass paper to one another and all sorts of things, chatted, you see. As a matter of fact, I saw a lad that had been in the ITC in Norwich with me when I joined, a ginger lad, and he was in the Essex Regiment. And he says, Dre, and we're having a chat on the toilet. We met on the toilet and parted. I never saw him again from that day to this. But he was there in this toilet. I don't know what he was doing there because he wasn't in our division. But he had come there for some reason.
You went back to Capua in late April,
yeah,
and
yeah,
to early April, yeah, early May.
Yeah.
So what were you actually doing?
They started, first of all, to get a bit of discipline. They smartened us up a bit. We had to clean our equipment and a few things like that. They gave us recreation as well to relax us and make
what
us.
What recreation did you get?
Well, we had Ensa concert. We had Izzy Bond come up there. He was a singer, comedian sort of individual, as I remember. They were Ensa people, you know. That,
any good?
Yes, quite. Well, we thought they were. Today they would, thumbs down to them, I suppose, on the television critics and that sort of thing. But we thought they were great. And I mean, and some of the English girls there, you know, today they'd be, you know, overdressed. But in them days it was sort of skimpy because we could see legs to their thigh and all that sort of thing. That was great, like us young lads there, seeing all this dancing about and prancing around on the stage. We had films outside They'd have a film at night, and they would
on what? How
big screen, and you just sat around. They usually had a little on a side of a hill or something like that, so the men sat and project onto a screen, big screen, and you had to watch because they were watching, I suppose, somewhere, so in case Germans came over and saw it. But yeah, they would show a cinema at night.
And what kind of cinema? I mean, the latest films or old ones?
No. Some of them were war films, believe it or not. One of them I always remember, not at that in Kapur, but I saw it as an outside film like that during one of our places we were stopped, called The Way Ahead, which was about infantry in North Africa, and which didn't go down too well. But no, we saw Bob Hope sort of thing, and Betty Grable.
People shout out things. I mean,
Yes. Oh, they did. And I mean, you know, sometimes it's a bit naughty, really. They used to shout and carry on. But because they had to stop to change reels, you know, on these old projectors in them days. And if it started to rain, of course, you sat there as long as you could and then make off. But no, that was all right. And then, of course, we had canteens come up to us. And they were English ladies, a lot of them had come up, and I remember they had jam jars for tea and things like that. And they had rock cakes, and Salvation Army had trucks out there, field canteens as they called them. I mean, they were in no danger, because only from bombing, and they could be that in England. But they were in no area, they weren't in shell fire or anything. But yeah, we had the canteens, and they let us go back into Kapur, supplied transport to Caserta and Kapur were the two places we went to. And that's when I'd say it was my first taste of vino. We didn't difference between the makes of vino. It was just red wine was vino rosa and vino bianco, the white wine. And we'd buy it by a jugful, go in and put some money down, and they'd keep filling this jug with this wine. And it was terrible, really. I suppose it's the first time I'd been drunk on wine. And I remember we got back, and they were making a noise and that, and the sergeant major threatened he was called Green. He'd come from Sidmouth, my sergeant major. He just come to me. And he was a fellow Devonian. And he used to get at me a little bit about one thing or another. And I used to say to him, oh, well, down in Devon, he said, don't you talk to me about Devon. You're not in Devon now. You're in Italy, and all this sort of thing. But I used to get at him. But he used to give me extra. We had green envelopes, filled envelope things, to write letters. And these were supposed to be, you didn't get them censored. You're on your word of honour not to write anything. But they were special, I've forgotten their name now, but they were green writing on them, filled letters or something, letter cards. And he used to give me extra ones, because you hadn't got stamps or anything like that, they went free. And you had airgraph letters, which was another form of a letter. You wrote on a form, and they photographed it, and it arrived back in England about a quarter of the size. The airgraph letters, they called them. I've still got a couple that not letters, but the Christmas cards. They gave us these, and they had a bit of a thing on them, and Merry Christmas, and you just sign your name, and Merry Christmas to my mother and that. See, and I've still got two that were among her possessions when she died, from me. So there we were, and they were doing, they were training us. We'd done a bit of river training on the Grigliano.
Tell me about the river training, because that's new, isn't it?
This
is in crossing rivers, I presume.
Yes, crossing the rivers, and they had canvas and rubber-style boats, and they were the technique of going across. Very good swimmers would try and swim it and get the ropes across for a start. They could fire them across with grapple hooks and things. But I didn't like it, because the Grigliano was in Spate then, and she was fairly heavy, and I wasn't a terribly good swimmer. But I went up, we'd done several of these crossings, but we were also, there was another battalion that was supposed to be defending. We took our turn as defence, and there was referees, like, I suppose, officers deciding whether we would have been overrun or whether we'd have driven the enemy back. This is the sort of stunt they get up to. River crossing schemes. So they had us there. We had all our equipment was replaced. Everything, your boots were mended and repaired, hairdressing, all your equipment. They incidentally, they gave us KD, that's a light summer type uniform with shorts. We were issued with those in May at Kapur.
What did you think of that as compared to the search before?
Well, you never went in. No, you had mainly it was what they called denims, like an overall denims trousers and thing. That's what we wore in the line mainly. We did in the wintertime wear them. Later on, we had our battle dress back again. When I was wounded in December, I was wearing battle dress. But no, we had our denims. And so when you move, you had to pack all this in your gear. But with the lightweight, was much better. Shorts, and we had a hose top thing, khaki hose shop. It's a long sock with no foot, and you wore your ordinary foot, your boots and your leggings.
Did you preferred it?
Oh, yes, it was much better.
It got warmer.
Yes, it was. So that was it. And then, of course, came the day.
Now, how long were you there?
Well, we were there for about 3 weeks, we must have been, because we went up again, yes, for about 3 weeks.
So, what day of the fourth battle? I'm not familiar with the dates. The fourth battle...
It opened on the 13th. Fourth Div went over the river.
That's 13th of May.
Yeah. And we went over on... and our first attack was the 16th. But it had been... of course, it was the Gustav Line we was going into, you see. And the Gustav Line, and they hadn't achieved very much. I mean, the 4th Div hadn't got very far in. And Germans had blown a lot of bridges. But by the time we got there, they had got up two bridges.
Now, which river is this? This is the Rapido?
The Rapido. And we went over on Amazon Bridge. The engineers called it the Amazon Bridge that they'd built, they'd got up. And we got on, and we took the ridge in front of us.
Yeah, slow down a bit. How were you briefed beforehand about this?
How were we briefed?
Yeah, what sort of briefing did you have? I mean, you know, what level of information did
they bring us up and they said, you know, we're going to attack, we're going to the front, to move up into the line and over we're going. And the sergeants and the corporals and everything, come and check your ammunition and inspect your arms, everything ready. And they just say, right away we go. And we went up in AKAK formation.
And what's AKAK formation?
Well, it means about the section, about 15 men on one side of the road. And then 50 yards behind on the other side of the road is another section. Then 50 yards behind them again over on our side. This is for in case you're bombed or hit by a shell, he won't take the lot out. You can't move a mob up. So that's AKAK formation when they're going up section at the time. To avoid being annihilated by one shell might put the whole lot out. But
anything in the approach to the Amazon Bridge?
No, nothing spectacular at all. A lot of devastation, of course, where the Germans have been shelling our side. But once we got over the bridge, then...
Now, what was the bridge like? Was it Bailey?
The Bailey Bridge, just an ordinary Bailey Bridge, yeah. And they'd managed to get a few tanks over.
Was it under fire?
Not at that moment it wasn't, when we went over. It wasn't, but it came under fire again. And actually, the Germans on the night, we got onto the ridge, as I say, we took the house.
Now, how far in front of the bridge was the ridge? I mean, how far did you have to go, and what happened while you were going?
About a quarter of a mile. That's as far as they'd got. That was and when we got up to it, we then spread out. The platoons then were spread across.
Now, what was the ridge called? Did it have a name?
No.
No, it was just a ridge in front of
it. Yeah, it's a ridge.
Now tell me about you. So you adopted a position on it. Describe the position a bit more.
Well, we were spread out horizontally with them, like with it.
Along the ridge?
Yes, along the foot of the ridge. And then we were told to advance, and on we went. Up we went onto the ridge. And the Germans were, well, then they started firing at us.
Where were they?
They were on the top of the ridge in this particular house, most of them. That's where their observation was coming from. And we were told to clear the house, this house and a few outbuildings, in order to, this was supposed to be our start line. But we couldn't get onto the start line because the Germans were still there.
So the top of the ridge was meant to be a start line.
Yes, and they hadn't got through them.
Now, was this building, did it have a name, or was it not as far as you know?
Not just, that I know of, no.
And it was a farm building, was it?
Yes, it was a farm building.
Now, what happened to you during the attack on the farm building?
Well, nothing really. I advanced with the rest of them on my side. Some firing came our way, but... we didn't just march forward like they used to years ago. We were doubling up and being and given commands to, you know, they'd say Dre and so, you know, get over towards them bushes there or get down and see what's going on down there.
So what happened when you got to the building?
Well, that we took some Germans. And two other lads were told to take an outhouse, an outbuilding, and we rushed in, and they were very lucky. There was two young Germans in there, and we, bear in mind, were trigger happy. We were shooting at everything and anything, and they were very lucky because we were trigger happy. No, I was, but we managed to see them, and they weren't. Their hands were coming up, and so we kicked them out. One of the lads sort of got there and he kicked them out and sort of get out and back, and they just ran down to where we were coming from. And we had got our outbuilding. We were very happy about that. And it was just the road, the main road. It was from Casino to Pontecorvo, I think it is, Pontecorvo. And that ran across, straight across our front, and the house was just beyond it. And this road was, it was a sunken road in a place. It had been cut through a cutting, and there was an awful lot of German dead in this cutting. But later, we stopped when we got on the ridge. We didn't go any further.
So you stopped on your start line?
And dug in on our start line, that's right.
Now, how did you dig in? I mean, how did you set up a defensive position here on the ridge?
Well, some men took up positions in behind walls and bushes and things and fired in front. There was a little valley between us and the next ridge, and we raked that far ridge and at the same time dug in, and men were digging, scooping out, and later we made proper slit trenches there and held it, and that what we were told to hold there. And then the Lancashire Fusiliers came through us, and they carried on the battle and took the next ridge, so that we were relatively safe then. And it was, as I say, on this sunken road, just 20, 30 yards back from us, where lots of German dead, and they were being mangled by tanks moving up. The tanks that supporting us were the 17th, 21st Lancers. They had a hat badge of skull and crossbones. And they were rolling up in their Shermans and running over a lot of these bodies that we'd been told to cover up because of the mess they were. And they were just, it was terrible what they were doing to the bodies. But we managed to scrape them into the side of the road and dig the bank down in on top of them. And that's all we could do. We couldn't bury them as such, just dug the earth from the bank down on top of them.
Did the tanks not try and avoid them?
No, nothing. It would have been difficult for them in any case because they were scattered over. No, they had no compunctions at all. They were just rolling up over them. There was one German there, I tell you, they'd gone across his head, and the steel helmet and the head was as thin as a piece of paper, the pair of them. And when we tried to move him, this head and helmet never came away. It came away from the body, and we had to scrape the rest, what had been the head and the helmet, in on top of the body. I took some badges off of there. I took the wound badge off one of them, and a parachute badge, because they were a parachute battalion that were opposing us, the Green Devils of Casino, they called themselves. At all events, we were there. That was our job, and I remember then that I'd done a bit of sniping. I'd been on a sniping course at one time, and I was put out front with a lad called Carter, who had joined the army with me, incidentally, and he was a signaller, and he had a little radio, and we were put out front to shoot anything that moved and report back anything we could see. And I remember we were out there probably 2 days altogether. We popped.
How far forward did you go? For, I remember, because I thought the Lancashire Fusiliers had gone through.
They had, yeah.
So how far forward did you go, as far as them?
Well, they went forward and they sort of screwed to the right through the valley. Because we were trying to get Route 6. One has to have a map to see it in the mind's eye, but they, instead of going straight ahead, we swung to the right to go over the Route 6, because the poles were coming down from the other side of the mountains, and we wanted to cut that Route 6. Once we'd cut Route 6, we'd got Casino. We'd got everything, and that was their trouble. We didn't get through quick enough, and the Germans were able to get out. We were doing a pincer movement, the poles coming one way and we the other. So in front of us, in actual fact, though the Lancs had gone through us, they'd swung right, and so immediately, about half a mile away, the Germans were still up on that ridge, the next ridge. But,
So tell me about the sniping activities. I mean, what were you doing out there?
Well, we were watching for any movement, and we did see, someone had been potting at us for quite a while one day, and we suddenly saw a little drift of smoke go away for some bushes. And I said to Carter, I laid my rifle on one side so I could look through the telescope, looking like you would with an ordinary telescope, and I saw what I thought was a movement in the bushes. So I fired two shots into this bushes, and we never had another shot come over. So what damage I'd done, I wouldn't like to say, but I think that if there was a German there, we'd shot him. There was an incident there, incidentally. We sent, before the Lancs had got up there, we sent a patrol forward to have a look in the valley, and Newton, my friend Newton that was in the Sanger with me, he was one of the patrol. Damn me if the Germans didn't catch them. And I think there was three of them. And they marched them off, and another one of our companies, they had gone forward, another patrol, and they heard them coming down the lane, and they took the German patrol plus the three British lads prisoner. And there was an officer among the Germans. He was rather annoyed, according to our adjutant in his diary. He says he was rather annoyed. But why I'm telling you this story is poor old Newton was taken prisoner that day, and I wish he had gone in Stalag, gone in the bag, as they say, because he was later killed and he's buried at Bologna, Albert Newton. If his luck was that he was recaptured that morning, the same morning he was taken prisoner. But had he been taken prisoner and taken back, he may have survived the war, but as it was, he didn't. So that's why I'm telling you that about this patrol. Anyhow, that was our do, and then the next thing we knew, that was the Gustav line had been broken. The Lancs got across, they sent a patrol across and linked up with the Poles, and at 9 o'clock in the morning on that, and I forget what date that was, about the 18th, we saw the red and white Polish flag fly from the monastery, so we knew that was in the Poles' hands, and of course, Casino was in ours because we'd cut the road. And so we'd got the Gustav line, and next one was about 10 miles further on in the Leary Valley. It was a big flat valley. The Germans had the Adolf Hitler line. So that was our next stint. So we were moving forward, and although it was fairly easy going, the Germans kept delaying us at various farms, and we'd have to have a bit of a scrap for the farm. He didn't put up much of a resistance. As a matter of fact, sometimes when there was young boys, they'd come out and surrender before we ever fired a shot for us. And so we had quite a lot of prisoners. We, on that first attack on the ridge, believe it or not, we took 70-odd prisoners, our battalion. But, so we got to Aquino.
And,
Aquino? Aquino is, Aquino. And there's a little airfield there. It was a mainly grass track, runways. And there was a perimeter road, and we were on the side of that. And this was waiting for the tanks and reinforcements to come up, ready to have a go at the Adolf Hitler line, which ran across him just outside of the Aquino town of Aquino. Well, I was on this track, and we were very thirsty. We had no water. And just on the airfield, there was I think it must have been an Italian plane. It had three engines and it had a corrugated body. And there was some grapevines growing around this edge of this airfield, and there were some green grapes. They weren't ripe or anything, but they were. I thought if we chewed them, we may get some, juice out of them, enough to quench our thirst. And I crawled out, and I'm just picking these grapes, and there was an awful crack, and a germ, and I knew I'd been hit somewhere on the body, and I doubled back and jumped into my slit trench with another lad that was with me. We had a Piat then, I remember, the two of us. And I was talking to him. I said, Jerry took a shot at me then. He said, look at your leg. And my leg was pouring blood. And my right leg. And my water bottle, incidentally, was shattered. A bullet had come across and it had grazed my hip and smacked my water bottle on my hip. So they came up and they put a shell dressing on it, a stretcher bearer, a medical chap. But anyhow, I didn't go out of the line, and then we went in again a couple of days after. And
how bad was the wound? I mean,
it was a cut, like a knife cut. It had grazed the bone of my hip, I think. It was painful and very sore.
And do you know what date you were wounded on? I mean, it's difficult to say. I mean, 19th, 20th, or
no, it'd be about the 19th. No, more than that. It'd be about 10 days. About the 26th, 27th, and we went in. Unfortunately for us, the Buffs went in first. They were another brigade of ours. Took a telever crack.
This is the attack on the Adolf Hitler.
On the line, the Buffs went in first. Took a terrible cracking, and they come back. And then we were told to go in. And when we went in, the Germans, there was pressure going on. They'd captured a Queen of Town. The tanks had got through. New Zealand tanks had captured the airfield, got into the town, and the French on the left were moving up the Villeri Valley on our left fast. He decided to pull out. Fortunately for us, the only thing was there was minefields we had to be careful of. A friend of mine did get blinded there, a chappie called Slim Mercer. I don't know, we always called him Slim, but poor old Mercer got blinded. Whether it was permanent or not, I don't know. On
what
a mine.
What was the danger of the mine? What type of minefield?
They were telemines, mainly after the tanks. But when infantry are among them, of course, and they explode under them, we catch it as well. They blow a lot of earth up and stone and all sorts if you're close to them. And a tank had gone over when we were moving up and caught the poor old Mercer in the face. But we got through without, because there was big steel tank turrets dug in the ground like First World War stuff, and blockhouses, deep dugouts in there, and we had to clear them. We inspected them and cleared them, and
what were your impressions of them, the dugouts?
Well, we knew that had the Germans been able to hold his flanks left and right, as I say, a Queen of Town and the French on the other side, we'd have had a stiff fight for it. He'd given the Buffs and the Royal West Kents, they were the two of the other the brigade, they'd taken a paste in trying to get in there, but trying to get the line. But
and what date did the Germans retire, do you think?
When they pulled out, they must have pulled out about, they must have pulled about a 1920, no, 2020, early 20, 20s.